some news that's painful to think about, I'm sure, for so many of you. And for anyone who loves football and appreciates what Aiden Hutchinson brings to the table, as much as the victory in Dallas is triumphant and I think a signature win for these Lions, another gauge, another step forward for them because they've got big dreams. Man, I'm feeling so badly for Hutchinson and his family. We know this. He's already had surgery. He's remained in Dallas so that he could have his broken leg taken care of immediately. I'm glad to hear that. I can imagine that this was something that he wanted taken care of right away. And you want to make sure he gets the best care possible. And so what we know is that he stayed behind in Dallas, had surgery as soon as he got to the hospital. And of course, you would expect a guy of his age, of his extreme physical health, and the fact that he'll have the best care, not just the medical care, but also the rehab, the recovery, the athletic training staff, mostly just because he's a world-class athlete with a motor to match, the energy that he brings to the table for the Lions. No doubt he's going to put all of that into his recovery process and getting back to the Lions. But I do hate it for him. And as much as it would be a story for all time for Lions fans, and I think really for anybody who's a football fan, if the Lions could win the Super Bowl or even get to the Super Bowl, what a huge milestone. I have no doubt fans all over the country will once again make Detroit their sentimental favorite, if you will, and will get on board with those Lions. It would stink if Aiden Hutchinson couldn't be part of it in that way. And so I'm feeling for him today. I know a lot of people in the Dallas locker room were feeling the same way, including Dak Prescott, because he had the same injury or similar injury not that long ago, just a few years ago, and certainly can empathize with what Aiden Hutchinson is going through now and will have to go through moving forward. But what a win for the Lions against a piecemeal defense for the Dallas Cowboys. Of course, they're missing pieces, but it seemed like Jared Goff and Sam Laporta and Amon-Ra St. Brown and David Montgomery and Jahmyr Gibbs and all of those weapons, they could do whatever they wanted at AT&T Stadium. And the boos were loud at halftime, loud. And as much as we could talk about the Cowboys' defense missing pieces, that's not the case on offense. They still cannot run the ball. So we are going to talk more about the Cowboys and the Lions because we've got our friend Babe Laufenberg, who does the Cowboys radio analysis along with Brad Sham's play-by-play. He's been doing it for a long time, multiple decades. He's a former NFL quarterback himself going back to the late 80s, and we always appreciate his time. We'll talk to Babe. He is a guy who takes what he sees and can inject reality into it, right? He's not wearing Dallas Cowboys stars for his eyeballs, even though he's a former Cowboy himself. At the same time, he tries not to get overly emotional about things and keeps a good perspective. So I'm always excited to talk to him. So we will connect with Babe Laufenberg next hour here on After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. I hope you had a great weekend. I know for a lot of people, it's a holiday weekend. So you have no federal government or agencies. I would say most state and town governments are closed too. I know it is in my town and my county for Indigenous Peoples Day, formerly known as Columbus Day. You know, can't be politically incorrect. But actually, it's kind of funny. When I said to my kiddos on Sunday morning that it's a holiday weekend and asked them if they knew what holiday and then told them what the name of the holiday is, not one of them had any idea what I was talking about. But they know that they have a long weekend from school, so that's good news. So many of you out of your regular routines, my husband and I went on a bit of, Would you call it a Northern Lights chase on Friday night? So as we were driving north into upstate New York to see if we could see Aurora Borealis, the traffic was incredible. So people getting out of town, going north to see the leaves changing colors and just going north to take the long weekend. So I suspect that's the case in many places around the country. And if that's you, you're out of your typical routine, you're not generally listening to the show at this time, maybe you're catching it for the first time or the first time in a long time, and we'd love to hear from you. This is one of the reasons why I like working holidays, although I don't think our company looks at Monday as a holiday. I don't believe it's a holiday that we generally take off. And in October, there's no time to take. There's no time to breathe. Forget time to take off. At A-Law Radio online and then also on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. No, we will not be spending the entire show on the Dallas Cowboys. That would be ludicrous. And also, I'd be bored out of my mind. There is a reason why I left local radio, because I got tired of talking about the same four and five teams. And in some cases, it's two teams over and over and over again. But I do know that there is a bit of a crisis still among fans in Dallas. And it's not like they're over. That's the interesting thing. It's not like they're the Carolina Panthers, and yet it feels so bad. People calling for mass changes going into the bye week. We will see if that happens, and you will hear from Jerry Jones as well. But we had some really cool battles on the schedule on Sunday. I really enjoyed Ravens and Commanders. It was a lot of fun to see those two teams. Now, in different places, of course, in terms of their foundation and their culture and their winning tradition, we know John Harbaugh is one of the most successful coaches in the NFL, and the Ravens have aspirations of getting to a Super Bowl. Well, for the Commanders, that's where they're trying to go, but they're early in their rebuilding process. They know they've got a bunch of young players in place and can build up around them, but they're so early in the process. Still, this was a close game for most of it, certainly competitive. I enjoyed seeing Derrick Henry, 30-year-old Derrick Henry, running roughshod over yet another defense. And I think it's amazing that he is out there defying odds and not allowing a number or an age to define him. Hear, hear. And so I know this is another Derrick Henry game, but it certainly is a Ravens organizational win. But Washington was gritty. The Commanders kept answering and stayed in it. Love, love, love to see the connection between Jaden Daniels and Terry McLaurin and how that will develop. Can you imagine how thrilled Terry is for the opportunity to play alongside Jaden and to have Jaden throwing him passes after the revolving door of quarterbacks that he's had in the nation's capital, not to mention coaches. Well, I think Ron Rivera was his coach most of the time. And now different coach with Dan Quinn, different system, different coordinators, but also how about owners? They've changed owners since he's been there, which is not a bad thing. And so I'm looking forward to talking about Commanders and Ravens. How about the coming out party for the other top pick at quarterback in the most recent NFL draft, Caleb Williams? Maybe he's going to want to go back to London. A really smart game, an efficient game. We know he's confident and has the skills, but this was the first game in which I feel like we saw all of that mesh together and come together for Caleb Williams. So a big victory for the Bears on the road. Don't look now, but Chicago is 4-2. That's the same record as the Green Bay Packers, by the way. So the Packers are also 4-2. Think about this. In the NFC North, you've got a 5-0 team. The Vikings are off this weekend. It's their bye. And three teams with four wins. Combined, the NFC North now is 17-5 out of the gate. That is really impressive. And right now is taking over the mantle of toughest division in football. We had two NFC South teams move to 4-2 as well. The Texans moved to 5-1. and the way that they have taken care of their business, even without Nico Collins. Now, you can say what you want against about the Patriots, their defense, their rebuilding, all that jazz. But you play the schedule that's in front of you. And the Texans, since the days of Tom Brady and Bill Belichick and then Bill O'Brien in Houston, New England's been a bit of a nemesis for Houston. And so this is a big win for them. And they tie both the Chiefs and the Vikings. Chiefs also on bye this week. The Texans tie those two teams with 5 wins, which is the most in the NFL through the 6 weeks. There is a lot to talk about, from the highest of the highs to the lowest of the lows, as the Panthers fall to 1-5, as the New York Giants lose at home with just a single touchdown against those Cincinnati Bengals. And if you were busy watching baseball, although baseball was fairly one-sided as well, but if you were watching baseball instead of football, I will say you didn't miss a ton in terms of action. There were a lot of stops and starts. There were a lot of kind of using the middle of the field. It was a game that kind of reminded me how weird the NFL can be from week to week. Think about this. The Bengals defense surrendered 41 points to the Ravens in overtime last week. Right? 41 points. This week, now, Giants are a different offense. But this week, the Bengals play much better defense and only surrender a single touchdown. But those same Bengals, who scored 38 points a week ago, only managed 17 against the Giants. Now, we know the Giants have some teeth to their defense, but it just indicates to me over and over the rise and fall of the NFL and how matchups, more than anything, matchups and how coaches and coordinators and players execute against the challenge in front of them, the matchup in front of them, how stats can be so skewed from one week to another. And you can be really thrilled about how your team played one week, and the next week go into a game, and it can be a completely different feel, and yet you can feel as though your team took a major step forward. This was a big deal for the Bengals. It really was. And to be able to go on the road to New York or New Jersey, but to MetLife Stadium, understanding that this was about as close to a must win as you possibly can get, the Bengals did what they needed to do. Even Joe Burrow, who had told us that his team was not championship level, he came as close to saying it was a must win as you can in week 6.
We'd be scratching and clawing for the rest of the year. We still really are, but it was good to get a win. Great to see our defense step up like that. They've taken some heat the last couple weeks, but they played awesome today.
They definitely did, especially after those 41 points against the Baltimore Ravens. You would think that a Joe Burrow who throws for 5 touchdown passes, that would be enough for his team to come away with the win. But it wasn't at home against the Ravens in week number 5. The Bengals have had some tough losses at home, actually. They opened up against the Patriots. Right now, that's the only New England win. Knocked millions of people out of their survivor pools. And then they lose to the Ravens last week. And that's, of course, in division. This one, a little bit different. And as I say, the offense, harder to come by. There was a lot of pressure on Joe Burrow. He gets sacked 4 times. He gets hit another 7 times. But ultimately, the Bengals score a touchdown on the opening drive of the game. And they also have the exclamation point near the end.
2nd down and 3 with 1:58 to go. The Bengals line up in a pistol formation with Chase Brown behind Joe Burrow. All goes in motion. They give it to Chase Brown.
Nice.
He's got the 1st down and 4.
See
up
ya.
The middle of the field. 10-5. Rolls into the end zone. Touchdown! Bengals with 1:52 to go, and that is coffin nails.
And then what we hear from Dave Lapham usually is, bam, bam, bam. Bam. It's the call that so many of you know on the Bengals radio network, Dan Horde and Dave Lapham. And yes, that final touchdown, I don't want to say it was a surprise necessarily. Maybe the Giants defense a bit beat down, but Chase goes 30 yards into the end zone with 152 to go. And yes, to be able to hold the Giants, who did have over 100 yards rushing, after giving up 41 points last week, Zach Taylor will take the 7 by the Giants from his defense.
Just a resilient group that goes about it the right way, believes in each other, believes in what we're doing. And that's what I expect to see from those guys. And so this was a great way on Sunday Night Football in front of the world for them to show who they are, because that's what we see every day, and that's the belief that we have in them.
Now, is that the truth? Was the world watching? I suppose. There are numbers and records that will show that even a preseason game between two teams that don't have a whole lot of star power, especially in the preseason, that will often get more viewers than a regular season baseball game or something along those lines. So the NFL certainly does have a draw. And on Sunday Night Football, it's a product. We have seen the NFL viewership numbers increase in the first 6 weeks dramatically. At some point, we'll get to those maybe later in this week. But it's pretty incredible, not just on TV, but the number of people who are flocking to the various streaming sources so that they can keep up with their favorite teams. As for the Giants, Jones ends up being the leading rusher. I don't love that. Obviously, they're in the wake of Saquon Barkley. They're looking for guys who can take charge. Jones, sometimes he's scrambling. Of course, he's got a couple of designed runs in there as well. But it's for Daniel Jones, for any quarterback, it's not my favorite thing to have a QB putting himself out there, getting hurt, especially Daniel, who's had a bunch of injuries himself, just trying to make anything happen. And so, yes, they do end up with 119 rushing yards, but unable to capitalize on their opportunities.
You know, I thought we had some opportunities, throughout the game, whether it be run, whether it be pass. We turned the ball over down there, on that drive, which was a good drive, and to come away with no points. And then I think 5 of 15, somewhere around there. Now, we were aggressive on fourth down, as I thought we needed to be against this offense, but just couldn't generate any explosive plays.
Brian Daboll with his assessment of the offense. So, yeah, there's certainly plenty. There's plenty of points and yards out there for both of these teams in this game. They were only into the red zone a combined 3 times. But a win is a win is a win is a win. And Joe Burrow underscored how important this was. So now they're sitting at 2-4. And, well, I don't know that anyone has major designs on the Bengals rising from these first 6 weeks, the ashes, if you will, and making some kind of crazy run. They certainly do have one of the best quarterbacks in the league, and if their defense can play better and they can somehow manage to get a win at home, they are 0-3 at home now, which is tough. You play in a really jam-packed division and conference where it's always competitive for the most part, and you don't take care of your games at home. Well, that is a huge problem. Another team that has not won a single game at home this year would be the Giants and the Cowboys in that same NFC East. So Giants are 2-4. And yeah, at MetLife Stadium, they're not kind to their fans. But the Cowboys, man, they are getting throttled at AT&T Stadium. So coming up, we'll get into that game a little bit. So bottom of the hour, as I say, Babe Laufenberg will join us at the top of the hour. So we'll do Cowboys and Lions and look at it from the Lions' perspective, too. I don't mean to say that this is all about the Cowboys, because it's not. The Lions taking care of their business and having to withstand a really gut-wrenching injury in the third quarter and yet able to get back to work. But coming up, we had Dodgers and Mets in the first game of the NLCS. Shohei Ohtani into his second playoff series. But he's not the only MVP on that roster. They've been waiting for their offense to break out, but I'm here to tell you that that is not the most impressive thing about the Dodgers, even though they put 9 runs on the board in this opener at Chavez Ravine. I'd love to connect with you online at A-Law Radio, or you can find me on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Our phone number is 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4227. It is a scintillating Sunday night here on After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
No score. The bottom of the first inning, a 2-1 pitch. Muncy swings, fights it to center field. This ball will get down. Mookie scores. Freddie trying to come around. The throw is cut off. He steps on the plate. Max Muncy with a 2-out, 2-run single. 2-0 Dodgers.
Senga at the belt, looking ahead toward third base. Comes home. Ohtani swings and chops it to the right side and to right field, a base hit. Alonzo Doe couldn't get there. Here comes Lux. RBI single, Shohei Ohtani. Make it 3-0 Dodgers.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Shohei Ohtani getting an offensive moment early in this game, and he was fired up, of course. 2-for-4 with a walk, an RBI, a couple of runs scored. And in that second inning, as the Dodgers were putting pressure on the Mets, that was the end of Kodai Senga. He was out after just 4 outs, only 30 pitches, but he does give up 3 runs on a couple of hits and 4 walks. And his manager recognized right away that this wasn't his night.
Yeah, he was off. You know, he didn't have it. He didn't have the life on his fastball and a lot of balls out of hand, you know, non-competitive pitches, you know, especially the split. You could tell that the way they were taking those pitches, they were balls out of the hand.
It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, the Dodgers with an offensive onslaught. And of course, we know this is what they're capable of, but we hadn't seen it much from them in the first 5 games of the playoffs against the Padres on Friday night. I'm sorry we didn't have a chance to talk about that game, but now, of course, 48 hours ago, only 2 runs. That's it. Just 2 solo home runs. But the pitching, that has been the huge surprise for the Dodgers. And I'll explain coming up at A-Law Radio, also on our Facebook page. We'll get to your Monday MVP poll, even though it might be a holiday Monday, as we put the weekend in the rearview mirror and set sail into another work week here in October. We'll give you a fresh opportunity to vote for Monday MVP. The Dodgers have multiple MVPs in their lineup, and I know Ohtani is the centerpiece, and even thinking back to Friday night's game, having Yamamoto on the mound, as well as Yu Darvish, and then Ohtani in the lineup for the Dodgers, you were talking about the entire nation of Japan turning in to watch that game, so it's huge. And Ohtani is about to win potentially another MVP award. I don't think there's a whole lot of debate about that in the National League. It'll be his first in the National League. But around him, you've got Mookie Betts, you've got Freddie Freeman, you've got other guys who have been on this playoff stage a lot more than Ohtani, and they are comfortable with this type of attention and pressure, right? I mean, these are guys, the Dodgers, who routinely, I know this year they had 98 wins, but this core group of guys, 105 wins, goodness, was it 111 wins a couple years ago when they were knocked out early by the Padres? And so the Dodgers, this is their comfort zone. Once they got past the Padres, I think that was a huge confidence boost for them after having had 5 days off. And the bats, they're kind of hit or miss in that Padres series. So credit San Diego's pitching. But on this day, there was no shortage of offense, including, well, a different MVP, Mookie, coming through.
Here's the 2-1 pitch. Mookie Betts hits it on the ground. Beyond a diving Vientos at third. Down the line and fair. Kike's in. Kiermaier scores. Shohei coming around. No play at the plate. A 3-run double from Mookie Betts. He unloads the bases and makes it 9-0 Dodgers.
That's the final score in this game one of the NLCS, but you know, they don't carry over. And I believe the pumpkin playoff New York Mets will have something in store before this series is done. The call's there on Dodgers radio. Now, the offense, again, that's what the Dodgers do. They can hit the snot out of the ball. But what I didn't expect from them this postseason is the lockdown pitching. For a team that could not keep its rotation intact at all this season. What did we hear from Michael Duarte last week? I think he said there were 20 different versions or 20 different guys who made starts for the Dodgers in 2024. Their rotation has been a massive blemish and a huge worry for a lot of Dodgers fans. And not to mention, they don't even have enough pitchers to go through a playoff rotation. Instead, they're routinely doing bullpen starts. Do you know what they have in store for game two against the Mets? A bullpen start. They don't even have a number two guy to go against the New York Mets. That's how bad it is right now for the rotation. So here is this team that couldn't put together a pitching rotation and keep it intact. They used multiple rookies, guys in and out of the rotation because of injuries. So they've needed to use their bullpen to fill in gaps. And yet, the Dodgers pitching has not given up a run since the second inning of game three against the Padres. You may remember that one. It was the game in which the Padres, and there were some shoddy choices, shoddy defense for the Dodgers in the field in that game. But the Padres gave up the Padres scored a sixth spot on the Dodgers in game three. It was second inning of game three. And right away, the Dodgers answered and they were able to get within a run, but that was it. There was no more scoring the rest of the way. Dodgers have not given up a run, not their starters, not their bullpen, since that point, game three of the NLDS. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Right now they're riding a consecutive scoreless inning streak that has reached 33. And that to me is really impressive. I didn't see this coming before the postseason. I knew the offense would be there. It always comes back to the offense for the Dodgers. But for their pitching to be holding other offenses at bay the way they have for 33 consecutive scoreless innings, it ties a postseason record with the Baltimore Orioles. This is huge. And on Sunday night, Jack Flaherty did the yeoman's share of the work. Seven full innings pitched, only 98 pitches. He allows a couple hits, couple walks, but no runs to go along with his six strikeouts.
A pitching clinic. I thought he did a great job of filling up the strike zone with his complete mix, used his fastball when he needed to, just minimize damage. And, you know, once we caught a lead, he did a great job of just going after those guys and attacking. And, you know, for us to get seven innings in a long series was huge.
I felt like my stuff in against San Diego was okay, but even in that game, I was able to get some outs and put a couple zeros together. And then was just able to clean some things up in my delivery and work on a couple things, work on my stuff. And, you know, warm up for the game felt good yesterday. Then it just comes out to executing.
So plenty of offense to support Jack Flaherty, but in this one, turns out they didn't need it nearly as much. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence coming up on Monday. We've got a doubleheader. You know, we're down to the final four in Major League Baseball, and this is where it gets tight. This is where it gets uber intense. So game two of the NLCS is actually the early game. So this is a 1:08 Pacific time start, 4:08 for the New York Mets and their fans. But on the West Coast in LA, it's a 1:08 start. And I dare say it's because those teams then have to make the flight cross country to get to Queens and Citi Field. So that's game two. And right now we know it's Sean Manaea for the Mets. It's a bullpen start for the Los Angeles Dodgers, which blows me away. But that's followed by game one of the ALCS as the Yankees will host the Guardians. And if you did not see Saturday afternoon's game between the Guardians and the Tigers, it was a game five. I know it was up against college football. There's a lot going on. Saturdays in the fall, people want to be outside. That includes me. You missed a moment on the shores of Lake Erie.
Thomas digs in, 0-for-2, but he's been one of the hottest hitters for the Guardians for a month. Here's the pitch to him. He swings and drives it high in the air, left field. Will it make the bleachers? Grand slam! Lane Thomas has put the Guardians in front with a grand slam.
Amazing moment. I was watching it on TV as it happened, as it unfolded, and the stadium was bonkers. Phenomenal to see. It's what I love about postseason baseball is the electricity in the various stadiums. And that was when the Guardians were trailing. But Lane Thomas with his biggest hit to date for these Cleveland Guardians. Remember, he was traded before the deadline from the Nationals to Cleveland. And actually, I've heard him talk about how he struggled just to get regular at bats. He said he would have a good game. He would come up with a big hit, maybe even a home run. And the next game he'd be sitting. And he had a really hard time with that, trying to break into this lineup on a regular basis. But as you hear on the Guardians radio network, he's been their most consistent hitter. And this grand slam was off Tarek Skubal.
I think that's tough. You know, he's got 100 in the tank and 95 on the sinker. And, you know, my first time with the bases loaded, I kind of was looking soft. I thought, you know, with that, in that situation, he wasn't going to come at me, and he proved me wrong. And then the next time I was like, you know, I got to be ready for the fastball. And, you know, he threw a good one that I could hit.
When we were approaching the trade deadline, we identified Lane as a player that we wanted. He fit a lot of what we needed. And this guy's been a great player in this league for a few years now. And Lane has just been, obviously, had a great series for us. You know, the two biggest hits, you know, outside of Fry's homer. But Lane is a phenomenal baseball player, and we're thankful we got him.
Stephen Vogt talking about Lane Thomas and, of course, that moment that propels the Guardians to the ALCS for the first time since they were the Indians. First appearance in this series since 2016, and it will be Alex Cobb against Carlos Rodon of the Yankees. Best of seven matchup, and I do love that after beating back challenges from the AL Central, the Tigers were game. They have better days ahead. They're a real young team. A lot of them experience in the playoffs for the first time. Plus, Detroit sports fans, they've got the Lions now. I dare say the Guardians need their baseball success, and that fan base needs the baseball success because of what's going on with the Browns, who we'll talk about a little bit later on. But yeah, the bulk of these Guardians, not all of them, but a lot of them, were part of that AL Central matchup and the playoff run in 2022, and then had a weird aberration in 23, but now they're back, and Vogt knows his team is very confident at this level.
If you don't believe in your group, don't even show up. We knew as soon as we got back to Cleveland, we had a chance. And yes, we're facing the best pitcher in the league, but that's who that group in that room is. They wanted it. They wanted to face him today. And if you don't show up fully confident that you're going to win, you don't show up to the field.
Yeah, speaking about Tarek Skubal, he did pitch really well for most of this game, but allows the grand slam off Lane Thomas and ends up, as he leaves the game, the look on his face. It's one of those moments, just disbelief, but also, man, regret if I could have had that back. He does go through the sixth inning. He allows the five runs on six hits, has his six strikeouts. But let's be honest, the Tigers aren't in this position without Tarek Skubal. And it was impressive that the Guardians had to go through him to get to the ALCS. Again, that first pitch in the Bronx is at 7:08 Eastern time. I think it's 7:08. Let me go back and check just because I don't want to give you the wrong times. Yes, they are. 7:38. See, this is what happens when I go off the cuff. 7:38 Eastern time for both Yankees and Guardians fans. And that is preceded by NLCS game two. All right, coming up, we're going to talk about the Lions and the Cowboys and another embarrassing defeat for Dallas at home, but also a really gut-wrenching loss for those Lions, even as they add to their record and stay on top, well, stay close, I should say, to the Vikings in the NFC North. 855-212-4227 at A Law Radio. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Here's our latest sports update. And here's Peter Schwartz.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
This report sponsored by Progressive Insurance. Protect your home and auto. Save when you bundle. Get a quote at progressive.com. Let's lead off with game one of the NLCS in Los Angeles.
He has reached twice. A walk and a single. Has scored once. And he takes it the other way. Dumps it down into left field. Ohtani coming around. He will score. RBI single Freddie Freeman on one leg. He's got his second hit. And the sixth Dodger run.
The call on Dodgers radio. Dodgers beat the Mets 9-0. L.A. pitching ties the 1966 Orioles for the longest scoreless inning streak in a single postseason with 33. Dodgers starter Jack Flaherty, 7 innings, 2 hits, 6 strikeouts. Now to the NFL.
The Bengals line up in a pistol formation with Chase Brown behind Joe Burrow. All goes in motion. They give it to Chase Brown.
Nice.
He's got the first down. The middle of the field. 10, 5, rolls into the end zone. Touchdown! Bengals with 1:52 to go, and that is coffin nails.
The call on Bengals radio. Bengals beat the Giants Sunday night 17-7. Joe Burrow with a 47-yard touchdown run in the first quarter, and you heard Chase Brown put the game away with a 30-yard touchdown run in the fourth quarter. Elsewhere, Lions over the Cowboys 47-9. The Lions' Aiden Hutchinson suffered a broken tibia in the third quarter, and he underwent immediate surgery. Other games, Falcons over the Panthers 38-20, Steelers 32, Raiders 13, the Chargers over the Broncos 23-16, Colts 20, Titans 17, Eagles beat the Browns 20-16, Bucks 51, Saints 27, the Texans roll over the Patriots 41-21, Packers 34, Cardinals 13, the Ravens beat the Commanders 30-23, and the Bears over the Jaguars 35-16. Game 2 of the WNBA Finals, the Liberty over the Lynx, 80-66. That series tied at a game apiece. I'm Peter Schwartz.
855-212-4227. That's the number to get in touch with us, the Infinity Sports Network. Give us a call, 855-212-4227.
Jared takes, turns, gives to David. There he goes with a hold to the 10. Montgomery angling to the 5, fighting his way and spinning inside the 2 to the end zone. Touchdown, Detroit Lions. David Montgomery running through contact, spinning inside the 5-yard line and finding the house.
Decker goes left, eligible. Skipper goes right, eligible. I formation behind Goff. Takes, turns, gives to Montgomery. Yep. He's eligible. He's into the end zone. Touchdown, Detroit Lions. They are putting the wood to the Cowboys here.
Off the field, on the money, and after hours, it's time to talk football with Amy Lawrence.
Dan Miller and company on Lions Radio, and David Montgomery signed a 2-year extension to keep him with Detroit until 2027. Promptly goes out and runs all over that Cowboys defense and shows the Lions this was a smart investment. He scores the first touchdown of the game, and really the Lions never looked back. They had points on all 5 possessions before halftime, little or no resistance or pass rush from Dallas. I think there were a couple of sacks of Jared Goff, but for the most part, he was able to stand back in the pocket and survey his kingdom. Detroit never punted. One time failed on fourth down, but otherwise came away with points and production on every drive. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. The first quarter drive for the Cowboys put Dallas in the red zone. So they had a field goal on their opener, and then they had another drive, and they were all the way down into the red zone. And as Dak is looking... around the end zone looking for his targets, letting the play develop. He misses Brian Branch, who is able to sneak into the end zone. So fall back, sneak into the end zone, and snag the pass from Dak before it hits his receiver. So he gets picked off in the end zone. And honestly, that felt like the point at which the Cowboys offense was broken in this game. Five total turnovers for Dallas. They go 0-for-3 in the red zone, barely managed 250 yards. Meanwhile, as I say, not only were the Lions able to execute whatever they wanted, almost not quite like routes on air, that's a little unfair, but they were able to get creative and involve different guys in the offense and different sets, different plays from the mind of offensive coordinator Ben Johnson.
Lions from their own 48 with a first down. Goff up under center, single back Montgomery. Jared takes, tosses to Montgomery, flips it back to Amon-Ra. He gives it to Goff, who's going to throw downfield. He's got Laporta, makes the grab. 20, 15, 10, 5, yes, end zone. Sir. Touchdown, Detroit Lions. How about a little razzle-dazzle in the Lone Star State? 52 yards. Third and 8 for the Lions from the 37 of Dallas. They lead this one 27-6. First drive, third quarter. There's the shotgun snap to Goff. Back, looking, throwing right Go. Side. Got a man out there.
Go, J-Mo, baby.
Touchdown, Detroit Lions. Oh, baby. Goff with a rainbow. Williams hauls it in, and the Lions add to their lead.
Jared Goff, 18 of 25, so he did actually miss on a couple of his pass attempts. 315 yards, three touchdowns, and the trick play, which was, it was just so much fun, right? It's different. It gets different guys to touch the ball. It gets everybody involved, and maybe, just maybe, it catches the defense off guard, where Goff hands off to David Montgomery. That's a legit option on this day. Before he flips to Amon-Ra St. Brown. Remember, Amon-Ra actually threw a touchdown last week, was it 2 weeks ago, to Jared Goff. And then the flea flicker to Goff, who promptly goes over the top for Laporta and a 52-yard touchdown. Again, Dan Miller, the play-by-play voice on Lions Radio. So David Montgomery, 80 yards, a couple of touchdowns. The team as a whole nearly hits 185 yards rushing. Incredible day for Brian Branch. A pair of interceptions as well as a forced fumble. I read that's only the second time in history any player has done that in the same game. The only blemish is the loss of Aiden Hutchinson in a play in which he collided actually with a teammate. And as it was happening, his leg appears to snap. You don't need to go back and look at the replay. It happened really quickly, so it wasn't as bad in real time, or it didn't look as bad in real time. Obviously, it was as bad. But to lose him is a huge blow, and the whole locker room knew it. Dan Campbell, his facial expressions as he's out there with Aiden. And then you see members of both the Cowboys and the Lions trying to encourage him as he's carted off the field.
He's being taken care of. He'll stay back here. You know, obviously he's going to be down for a little while. And so that's tough, man. It's hard when you lose somebody like him. And but we'll know a lot more after this, and obviously wish him the best.
It's really tough, and he's a guy who's part of the heartbeat of this team, and is a leader, does everything right. He's a great teammate. He's everything you want in a player and a teammate, and to have him go down like that and to be visibly upset is tough for all of us. And he will be fine. You know, he's going to come back eventually, whenever that may be, but knowing him, he will be fine, and he will bounce back.
7.5 sacks before he got injured, including one in this game. As for the Cowboys, 0-3 at home, which is now four consecutive losses going back to that game against Green Bay in the wild card round of the playoffs. And Dak Prescott absorbing a ton of the blame, now with six interceptions on the season.
We've got to get better, simply. And obviously we're going into the bye week. I mean, we're 3-3, six games under us, a long season to go. I've been in worse situations, I guess you can say, in teams, and then got it going. Teams that got on a streak, I think about 2018. It's about us sticking together. And I think after a loss like this, no better time than to test the character of that.
47-9 was the score. No touchdowns for the Cowboys. We'll talk to Babe Laufenberg after the top of the hour. As for Jerry Jones and a potential coaching change, quote, Oh, I haven't even considered that. I'm not considering that. Just so you're clear, I'm not considering that. 1 hour down, it's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.